This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 39. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I'm also joined by Matthew Marister, one of our instructors based in Columbus, Ohio, and owner of Lucas Tactical. And Matthew, you are the man. Can I just say you're a stud?
Oh, well, if you want to, yeah, I'll go with that.
Matthew is a stud because, folks, you might be hearing some interesting, and I'll actually just call it really nice sounding background noise, because Matthew is in a really nice place right now.
Yes, I am. I can't complain, I have to admit.
Can you tell the folks where you are, or is it top secret?
It is not top secret anymore. No, I'm out in St. Lucia visiting my in-laws. They're having a family party down here, so I'm enjoying the nice weather and relaxing.
I'm expecting an invite to that next family party there.
Yeah. Well, it's been a while since we've been here, but it's long overdue.
I can wait a while. Anyway, so you are in a very beautiful, nice place. I hear a nice, soothing breeze blowing by. Is this a beach house that you're in?
Yeah, it's we're really close to the ocean. It's nice and breezy, and about 85 degrees. So I'm not complaining. Absolutely not.
Oh man, if I listen real carefully, I think I can hear the waves.
And so you hear the steel pan in the background.
That's cool too, though. That's cool. So we really appreciate you joining us and taking time out of this precious time to talk to us from a far distant, long ways away, beautiful place. So,
yeah, I love it.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm jealous. So coming up today, we cover more reports about concealed carry permits hitting more new records, how a gun control supporter admits to their desire for the Second Amendment to be repealed, big surprise there, and we share the story of how a young boy saves his mother's life, but not with the weapon you would expect. All this and more on the Concealed Carry Podcast, but first, the featured product of this episode is our own American gun law course that you've probably heard quite a bit about recently. And if you're on our email list, you've gotten pounded with emails. But we did that because we were giving away almost $40,000 worth of stuff. And we're still doing that. We're still in the launch phase of this, which will last just a couple more days, folks. This podcast being recorded on July 28th, but set to be released on August 1st, which I happen to be on vacation that day. So anyway, we want you to know that you've got less than 48 hours, most likely, from the time you hear this podcast to get the American Gun Law course ordered. So do so now. And I'll have another message at the end of the episode with a link where to go to do that. But we want you to do that because you're going to get a ton of bonuses. And then you might even have a chance to win some more gear. We gave away the AR-15 rifles already, unfortunately. Sorry. But there's still a couple other huge goodies up for grabs, including a huge, awesome, actually, I should say huge, awesome range day with Riley and Jacob, where we'll just blow your mind, you and a special guest, for an entire day. So that's still up for grabs. So get online and order that American Gun Law course now. So let's get into our usual weekly training tip. And this week's tip is brought to us by our own Matthew Marister. So Matthew, why don't you introduce it to us?
Yeah, well, while I was sitting out here, I was thinking of some, when you came up with a training topic for this week, and I was thinking about a couple of the recent shootings that I was watching involving citizens and off-duty cops and things, and gearing more towards active shooters, terrorist response, and multiple threats. So I was thinking about talking about some techniques and tactics you use to engaging multiple targets. Typically, we just, when we're training on one target at the range. but the kind of the mindset of, hey, how do I transition between targets, or how do I even go in processing which target to shoot at first?
Yeah. Well, that's a big question, you know. And some people, I'm sure, might even ask themselves, you know, how likely is it that I would actually encounter a deadly force situation where there are multiple attackers or multiple intruders? And to be honest, I don't know that I have the answer for that. But I do know that we've shared a number of justified news stories on the podcast where multiple intruders or multiple attackers were involved. So it is something that happens, and we should be prepared for, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, just this last one, I saw the shooting that happened in a Walmart. I think it was in Georgia, I believe, where the husband and wife went in there and just started shooting the place up, and a concealed carrier went after the husband, assuming he was by himself, and the wife ended up being armed and shot him because he focused on one threat. Didn't even, you know, contemplate there being two threats. And I think it's important to look at it when you're looking at targets, to not only, you know, the initial reaction would be like, okay, well, I want to engage the first target that's closest in proximity to me. But if that target, you know, may be a lesser of a threat, they might be closer into proximity, but maybe the person further away has more of a clear, you know, line at you, or has a gun as opposed to a knife or something like that, where you might have to kind of assess, hey, who is a bigger threat, even though
right,
this person or this threat is closer to me.
You know, I know definitely in our law enforcement training that I am involved with, that this is definitely something that's talked about and discussed and trained, that whole, you know, proximity first or biggest threat, right? I would say, I think, just thinking about myself personally and just kind of how my mind works and operates, I am probably naturally, and I think most people are, more inclined to address the most, the closest threat first, because that's going to appear to be the biggest threat because they are closer. But we do need to be careful that that's not always where the greatest threat is coming from, because maybe that closest person doesn't have a gun or any weapon, but the person behind them does. And so, you know, and maybe the distance is not, you know, maybe the one person's at 3 yards and the other person's at 7 yards. Well, that's still reasonably close distances here. Not that to say that every situation is going to warrant, I'm going to shoot always that further away threat because he's got the bigger weapon first. But it's definitely this thing that's got to be thought about and considered. And we need to be like really hyper aware of in that situation. Yeah. Like, what's going on? You know, where are my threats coming from?
Right. Exactly. I mean, just being aware. I mean, I know a lot of times we get that tunnel vision and it narrows our vision, field of view already, but being aware Absolutely. Of what's going on around you can kind of let you see, hey, this person's reloading or this person's having a malfunction with the firearm. I can address this guy very quickly or this threat and then transition back. And also thinking about, you know, let's say you have two threats and they're both equally, you know, imminent of a threat to you. How do you go about distributing your shots? You know, do you unload everything on one, then transition and unload everything, or do you spread it out? I don't know. You know, with your law enforcement background, I know you were addressed, but I know, you know, the way I was trained is, you know, you engage the initial threat or the one that you determine you're going to engage first with the, you know, maybe one or two shots, you transition to the other one, even if that threat isn't completely stopped. You still have to, you know, you might have to switch over to that other threat to kind of spread out your fire on them, because if you're hammering that one threat, that other person's advancing on you or becoming closer and closer, and you still have to, you know, kind of distribute your shots out amongst both threats. So it kind of becomes a almost like a distribution type thing.
Yeah. And that's not always probably easy to to determine. I know I've seen a lot of different drills that involve addressing multiple threats. But I would probably be inclined, just me personally, in typical self-defense ranges, so like 3 to 7, maybe 10 yards max, to take the closest target and get 3 or 4 quick shots on that target, and then turning and addressing other targets. Because if they're at 3 yards, I can point shoot that. And I know dang well a man-sized target, I am not going to miss at that range. I can shoot as fast as I want at 3 yards. And so I can go bam, 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 you know, get 3-4 shots in a second or less, and then quickly turn and address target two. That's not going to always be the answer, but that's definitely something that I could see playing out for just me. And like, I just know that's kind of how my mind thinks and processes things. Realize too that psychologically in a situation like this, from the perspective of the bad guy, when shots start, you know, when bullets start flying around, they're not going to always, you know, people aren't going to necessarily be aware that of who you're actually shooting at, because it's going to happen so fast.
Exactly.
and be so sudden. Like, there's still, like, even if you don't necessarily make the right decision about which target you should address first based on the level of threat that they are, if you start throwing rounds really fast, really violently at the most proximitous target to you, everybody is going to probably freak out a little bit.
Exactly.
You know, all they know is a gun is going off very rapidly and close to them. And for all they know, you're shooting at them. Now, not to suggest that, like, you're going to automatically, you know, scare everybody away and that they're not going to continue trying to hurt you. But there is some effect there, I believe. But it's so, like I say,
the psychological effect's big.
Yeah. Yeah. And it goes the other way too. Absolutely, for, you know, you as the victim too. But I just kind of feel like, in general, as a general rule, Riley is going to address the closest target very rapidly, and then turn to other threats as necessary. You mentioned something very good a second ago about the whole tunnel vision effect, which is so true. And this is why we always talk about, and this could be its own training tip, about the importance of actually physically turning your head to scan and address, you know, targets and potential threats, because you will lose your peripheral vision. You will not be able to just see things out of the corner of your eye. You will need to actually turn and scan.
Absolutely. And I think that's huge. I think, you know, this whole concept of engaging multiple targets, no matter how you do it, you know, if you're just going to hit the most proximate threat that's closest to you and do that 4-round, 3-round burst, like you said, and then transition to threat number two, or, you know, if there's more, if you have the time to kind of assess. But when you go to train, especially when you're training and you're going to do multiple targets, don't just get in the habit of, okay, I'm going to shoot on this target and then I'm going to transition and shoot on this target, but actually go through a process of scanning your head. Like you said, turn your head and break that tunnel vision and actually, you know, understand what it's like to transition from a target at 5 feet and then at 10 feet, you know, where your point of aim might be a little bit different, but don't always try to set those targets exactly at the same distance and just go back and forth. Yeah. You know, train at different distances and get your eye level going up and down and in your head, so you can kind of replicate as close as you can to moving from one target to another and engaging quickly on both targets.
Yep. Yeah, that's good stuff. We've covered this pretty well, I think, so far, but I do want to throw out there just one more thing, just kind of food for thought for people to consider. And maybe this becomes its own kind of training tip. But what about, like, you've got multiple targets and maybe they're at different distances, as we've discussed as well, with different varying levels of threats or weapons involved. What about tactics for moving and creating angles as well?
Yeah, I think that's huge, because especially when you're dealing with two threats, You might not be able to, you're obviously not going to be able to engage both of them at the same time. So creating angles and moving is going to be even more critical, because obviously it's harder to shoot a moving target. And if you have two threats that are shooting at you and you can only engage one, if you're moving, you're causing that other threat to have to track you. Or if you're trying to move to, you know, cover more quickly than you would just engaging one target, it's even more important when you're dealing with multiple threats, because you obviously your attention is divided and you have to use whatever you can outside of just, you know, gunshots to be able to get yourself into a position of advantage somehow.
Yeah, totally. You're absolutely correct in that. Matthew, you're just stinking smart is all I have to say. But
don't let anybody know that.
But you're right. You know, I mean, even if we only have one threat or if we have multiple threats, but like you said, it's probably even more important that when we have a multiple threat situation, we have to be on our feet. We have to be moving. I sometimes have thought and wondered, you know, about how you might move. And obviously you want to create some lateral movement, because that is always the more difficult target to shoot, as opposed to just moving straight back away from the threat. But sometimes I've thought, right, what about, you know, moving in such a way that you end up positioning maybe the closer threat in between you and a further away threat. And like,
exactly,
that person in the middle gets caught in the crossfire, perhaps more. And, you know, just some things, there's a lot of things here to consider and think about. And I liked your tip as far as when you're at the range. I mean, so many people do indeed just, if they're able to set up multiple targets, say two or three targets, a lot of times I see, you know, examples of this on YouTube and they're all at the same distance. So like you said, get those positioned at different distances, because that is more lifelike.
Yeah. One other training tip that I really like to do in my classes, and it's a real eye opener for people, is when I do multiple targets and I put them at different distances, I like to take another target and then put it in the middle and in between those two, and kind of where you're kind of obscuring either one or the other target a little bit. And then if they move offline as they're shooting one way or another, it becomes, that angle becomes more evident, and it puts that friendly target in between the no shoot target. So kind of simulating, hey, there could be, you know, if you're in a busy place and people are going to be running around, like we said, as soon as they hear gunshots, you're going to have innocent people running around maybe in between the two threats. And it kind of gives them an idea of, hey, angles are very important when it comes to not shooting good people and trying to, like you said, get an angle on possibly aligning maybe those two threats front to back, right in front of each other. So that's another thing that they can do, you know, if they're able to do that, which is really an eye-opening drill.
Yeah. And if any non-shooters are listening to this podcast right now, if you're in a public place with multiple people and shots start ringing out, and you're not, like I said, you're a non-shooter, just hit the deck. Make it easy on us.
Right.
So, good stuff. Thanks for the training tip. I think that gives a lot of stuff for people to think about and consider. And actually, I think there's some opportunities to dovetail into our episode coming up later this week on Wednesday, August 3rd, where we've got a special interview with somebody that's never been on the podcast before. And we talk about training outside the box, which is I think there's some things there that kind of cross over into what Matthew and I have discussed here today. So check that out.
That'll be great.
All right. So let's get into our regular news stories. I'm going to kick it off with a report, and we've reported a number of things similar to this, but like every month, you know, it just keeps happening again and again and again. And what I'm referring to is that virtually every month for the last year, we have been setting records as far as concealed carry permits being issued. And this latest story coming to us from the Washington Times Which is the preferable Washington, D.C. Publication, if people want to know, as opposed to the Washington Post. But the Washington Times reports, more than 14.5 million Americans are now licensed to carry a handgun, a jump of, and get this, 1.73 million in just a year, according to new research that says, and this is another big thing to this, according to new research that says, women and Black Americans are among the most eager to sign up. Wow, big news there.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. That's great. I mean, and you know, when you break it down into demographics, two demographic groups that need, everybody needs to be, you know, able to defend themselves, but these demographic groups that have tended to be on the, you know, not in the gun community per se, you know, and coming into that is so much more powerful to be able to grab these groups and these representatives to go back and deal with the people in able to, you know, instructors are just now beginning to understand, hey, we need to teach to women as well, you know, because there's different techniques to teach to different, women and men and things like that. So I think this is really great.
Yep. That increase, it's so, let me just give, put this into perspective a little bit. I mean, concealed carry has really only been around like widespread for 15 years, 20 maybe, wow. Right?
Right, right.
I mean, some states have been a lot, you know, have really had and encouraged concealed carry for longer than that, for sure. But as far as like having the plethora of shall issue states like what we have now, has been a movement that's really occurred in fairly recent history. So we're at 14.5 million CCWers now. That jump of 1.73 million from last year, that's a 13.5% increase. That's just huge to me.
Incredible.
Yeah. And so, like you said, as far as the type of people, the demographics that are being trained, I mean, this doesn't surprise me at all, because almost every class I have now is very evenly mixed amongst the various mm-hmm. demographics. There was a time I remember as an instructor that like every class was just like old white guys. You know, like 55 yep. plus, you know, white guys, and now it's more demographics. It is women. Class I just had over this past weekend was probably 45% women, which I mean, that's just huge wow. to me. And it was a big class. We had a couple of dozen people there. It was really a challenge to get through it all. But and then, you know, I mean, there's Hispanics, there's African American, there's all nationalities that have been in my classes recently, and that is just awesome to see. It makes me so happy.
Yeah, and I mean, and we're kind of in an environment right now that's still kind of majority, you know, anti-gun, you know.
Yeah.
And even to see those increases, even with that kind of idea that's out there right now is amazing.
Good stuff. Let's get into the next news story. And this was one that you dug up, Matthew, so I'll let you introduce you. And this is the campus concealed carry law going into effect at UTEP.
Yeah, so I thought this was pretty cool. I know you guys did an episode about allowing private universities, right, in Texas to go opt into concealed carry. But public universities, University of Texas, El Paso, are going to allow concealed carry on campus going in effect August 1st. And so, you know, I thought it was a pretty good article. They interviewed a couple different students and, you know, one kind of against it because she believed that, you know, weapons are weapons and then they're dangerous. As most people do. And then another kid that was interviewed thought it would be a good idea, felt he was going to be safer and thought about getting his own, applying for his own concealed carry permit. So I think it's, I mean, obviously anybody who's listening is probably understands the importance of having licensed and responsible gun owners and how that deters crime. I think it is a really good step in the right direction out in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, I'm just excited to see more progress made, I think, in this area of campus concealed carry. I live in Colorado, and Colorado was fantastic in that, you know, all public universities in Colorado, it's not like they have to allow concealed carry on campus. It's in the statute.
That's great.
Utah permits it now. I believe Idaho permits it now, as far as public universities and colleges. I hope this continues. I don't see any reason why we should have another Virginia Tech.
No, absolutely not. I mean, yep. You know, the only arguments against these schools is, you know, sometimes the professors, you're going to have an irate student over their grades and going to come and shoot up the place and things like that. And I mean, I think statistics have shown that, you know, your concealed carriers are not people passing background checks and doing the training are not the ones that are unstable people going in and shooting over somebody over a, you know, getting a C right. or an F instead of an A. I mean, it's just, it's kind of a ridiculous argument when, you know, having an armed person somewhere on campus that's trained and especially females walking to and from classes at night, you know, I mean, yep. it's just working on a campus is kind of eye-opening and understanding how vulnerable these kids are because they can't even carry, you know, on California, they can't even carry, you know, pepper spray or anything on right. campus. No weapons, period. And it just makes them so vulnerable to anybody who, you know, obviously doesn't follow the law and they don't care, you know.
Yeah.
So I think this is great in introducing kids, young adults, I guess, into, you know, being responsible and their rights, you know. I think it's great.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. These are adults, you know, going to college. They're not little kids anymore. You know, some of them may still act like little kids, but you're right. As far as like the ones that actually are serious about going and getting training and actually going through background checks and getting permits are more inclined to be, you know, they take things more seriously anyway. They're more responsible because they had to go through that process. And, you know, I just don't see any reason why these adults can't defend themselves. I mean, as opposed to like, you know, what are your options on a California campus? Rape alarm, calling for help, you know, peeing on your attacker.
Right. I mean, we do. You know, I used to help out with the rape aggression defense training and, you know, helping college kid females especially learn what to do in defense of, you know, if somebody tries to sexually, you know, assault you. And you're limited. I mean, and let's face it, you know, there are people that are more physically overpowering, even if you have technique and you know, you do these techniques. I mean, there are people that are physically overpowering, especially if they're, you know, on narcotics or something. And so to be able to have that, that confidence that, hey, I can defend myself no matter what the attacker, mindset or determination or focus is, you know, I think it's liberating for a lot of these kids.
Absolutely. Let's move on to our next story. This one's coming from the NRAILA.org site. And although I saw this reported in a number of places, and actually we meant to talk about it in last week's news episode, but we just didn't really get to it. But it's kind of big news. It's a big deal. And the headline is, Massachusetts Attorney General unilaterally bans thousands of previously legal guns. And this just blows my mind for a couple of reasons. I mean, number one, it's really just going, just blowing things out of proportion as far as the guns that they are now considering illegal. And secondly, it's the fact that the Attorney General by herself, yes, it's Attorney General Mara Healey. She decides just on a whim this is what we're going to do. It's not a whole lot different than President Obama or any president for that matter, you know, issuing an executive order that severely restricts or limits Second Amendment rights. And, you know, this didn't come from the legislature in Massachusetts. It didn't come from the people. It didn't come from the governor even, although the governor, I'm sure, supports it. But, you know, this was just a complete unilateral action. And did you see the type of weapons that you know, that they are now classifying as assault weapons?
Yeah, yeah, and it makes no sense. It's kind of, I mean, it is really ridiculous. And basically, and I kind of predicted this, or I mean, I'm sure everybody kind of predicted this when they saw this. But by you know, kind of making the AR-15, you know, the demonized weapon, and getting people to say this is an assault weapon, which is really mechanically no different than so many other guns, allows this kind of idea that, well, any semi-automatic rifle should be considered an assault rifle. You have to ban so many. You can't just ban the AR-15. You have to ban mechanically similar weapons, and it's right. Ridiculous.
Let me just quote from the article here, and this should just really open people's eyes as far as how ridiculous this ruling is. It says this: beyond AG Healy's obvious incorrect interpretation of the laws, her enforcement notice fails to provide an intelligible definition of what will be considered an assault weapon by her office. The enforcement notice provides only the following test to determine if a firearm is a, quote, copy or, quote, duplicate assault weapon and therefore banned. And this is coming from the enforcement notice right here. A weapon is a copy or duplicate and is therefore a prohibited assault weapon if it meets one or both of the following tests and is, one, a semi-automatic rifle or handgun that was manufactured or subsequently configured with an ability to accept a detachable magazine, or two, a semi-automatic shotgun. And then this is the two tests. One, similarity test. A weapon is a copy or duplicate if its internal functional components are substantially similar in construction and configuration to those of an enumerated weapon. Under this test, a weapon is a copy or duplicate. For example, if the operating system and firing mechanism of the weapon are based on or otherwise substantially similar to one of the enumerated weapons. And two, interchangeability test. A weapon is a copy or duplicate if it has a receiver that is the same as or interchangeable with the receiver of an enumerated weapon. A receiver will be treated as the same as or interchangeable with the receiver on an enumerated weapon if it includes or accepts two or more operating components that are the same as or interchangeable with those of an enumerated weapon. Such operating components may include but are not limited to, one, the trigger assembly, two, the bolt carrier or bolt carrier group, three, the charging handle, four, the extractor or extractor assembly, or five, the magazine port. Did that make any sense at all?
Yeah, basically it's legal ease for we're just going to do whatever we want and make it up as we go along.
Yeah, that's kind of how I read it too. I mean, I think I think in the crosshairs here is obviously anything that's AR-15 type platform, but I think they're opening the door to just about roll all, because I mean, it was a number of tests there and things, and it's basically saying if any of one of these is met, then this is an assault weapon and therefore banned. So
right, I mean, all your Ruger 10/22s, I mean, just your varmint plinking rifles and things like that. I mean, they're semi-automatic, right? And you can put a magazine in there, and I mean, I just don't understand how they're going to differentiate when they can just say it's similar. Well, what is similar? We all know if you've been in around legal proceedings or, you know, the legal process at all, you have to be very specific in things, because when you leave interpretation, so much happens.
Yeah. Yep. Well, folks, watch out there in Massachusetts, and good luck. Yeah. And I suspect there's going to be some legal challenges to this, and naturally they'll have to work their way through the courts, and we'll just see how that all pans out. So, next story, and this is one that you also brought to the discussion today and put into our show outline. Matthew, why don't you talk about this military veteran showing why the Alton Sterling shooting was justified?
Right. Yeah. And I thought this was good. Not so much, I don't want to get into the, you know, the analysis of the actual shooting itself or, you know, whether it was justified or not, because truthfully, I don't know if all the facts that have been, you know, reported on are accurate or all the facts, period. But I do know, you know, and you know, and probably anybody else out there that's done law enforcement training, we know how dangerous people are, even when they have a firearm in their pocket or holstered or something like that. It's not just that that firearm that's, you know, aimed at you, it's the threat, or it's not just that person that's right next to you. And in this video, the person does a really good job of showing that, you know, if you have a firearm in your pocket, like Alton Sterling supposedly did, it's just as much of a threat as if it was brandished or out in the open, because you can still manipulate that trigger even with your hand either inside your pocket on that gun or outside your pocket depending on the type of clothing you're wearing. So I thought it was a good you know, visual demonstration of, you know, just because somebody has a firearm in their pocket does not mean that cannot be a dangerous weapon. I've drawn my firearm through my shirt and held it through my shirt, and you'll never even see the gun present itself to you. And you can draw that gun with your hand on the outside of your shirt and squeeze that trigger through your shirt, your t-shirt, and fire that firearm right through your t-shirt, and the person would never see that gun. So I think it really showed and was an eye-opener in a lot of people's minds is, you know, what is a threat? When can somebody be a threat to you? You know, if you're going to use deadly force to protect yourself.
Yep. You know, I saw this video on Facebook. That's where it was released. It was a Facebook Live video that this guy did. And Mike Brown is his name. He's the one that did this video. He's an Army vet and firearms instructor, so he understands how guns work. And like you said, he demonstrates very simply and very clearly just how easy it is to fire this gun through his pocket. His hand is on the outside of the pocket, pressing the trigger through the pocket. And so I look at the video of the Alton Sterling shooting, and I've watched both angles many, many, many times. I'm like, I'm just the type that when this sort of thing happens, I go back and I watch it over and over and over and slow-mo, you know, pausing at certain points, just trying to make, you know, really understand what's going on. And like you said, we're not going to get into the whole analysis of it, but here's what I see when I've watched this dozens of times. I sense that Alton Sterling's right hand and arm is not fully controlled by the officers. And it's not terribly clear, but looking at the way his shoulder and his upper arm still is kind of moving and jerking around, I sense that arm and hand is not completely under the control of the officer, the second officer that's on top of him. And part of that's because of the way he ended up going to the ground. He's kind of a little bit underneath the bumper of the car. And it probably made it really difficult for them to get good control of him. And right. So whether his hand was on the outside of that pocket or on the inside of the pocket, if he managed to thrust it inside the pocket, there's a chance in the angle of the second officer that's on top of him is right in line with where that shot is going to go. And so just take it or leave it. That's my perspective of after watching this dozens and dozens of times.
Yeah. I totally concur. I mean, you know, like I said, I just videos are great. They're only part of the evidence out there. But it definitely, I mean, at first blush, you look at it and you say, "Oh, he didn't even pull the gun out. He was no threat, even though he had the gun or whatnot." But you know, videos like this, where somebody who knows what they're talking about, obviously instructor and everything, it can explain to you that, you know, it's not always what you see in front of you that can be a threat, and officers know this. And that's why when we're in, you know, fighting a suspect on the ground and we're trying to get control of their hands, we know hands can go very quickly to places around the waistband, and it doesn't take much of a turn or a shrug, and that gun is, you know, right up against you. And it's I think it was a great great little training point.
Yeah, you don't wait for that gun necessarily to get out of the waistband or out of the pocket, because by that point, it's already fired and you're dead.
It's done, right?
You know? Right. And I'll throw out there too, by the way, that watching the video, I hear a gunshot initially, but I do not see the first officer's gun move. Just saying. I watched that a bunch too and played it in slow-mo, and I hear a bang, and I'm not seeing that first officer's gun doing anything at that point. And then he proceeds to fire. Anyway, let's move along. So also kind of somewhat controversial, but in Chicago, this is the Chicago Tribune reporting on, well, not in Chicago, this would actually be in Philadelphia, where the Democratic National Convention is taking place. Right. But a group of Chicago mothers who have lost children to gun violence, they stood on stage, the DNC, asking for police reform and more gun control. I think I just have one comment here, and my comment is that they're from Chicago. Does Chicago not already have pretty strict gun control?
Exactly. As a parent, you know, you feel for anybody.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. And I don't want to, we're not like trying to be, insensitive to that. But the gun violence that afflicted these mothers' children would have not been prevented with more gun legislation or anything. It would probably help to, be more educational as far as the lifestyles that some of these people were living, as opposed to more gun control. As far as, unless you're trying to ban every single gun, obviously, but I think that it was just kind of ironic when I watched this, and I thought, it's kind of weird that, you're bringing these people up to talk about gun control, where I would think that you would bring up people that were killed by people with illegal guns. Maybe laws are already on the books and we want to enforce them, more stringently. And somebody who is an innocent person just walking down the street killed by somebody who's had a gun illegally or just bought it through a straw purchase or something like that, where they can say, yeah, we need to do better on this type of stuff, not criminal element type stuff, which, I just thought it was kind of ironic.
So true. Now, Matthew, I'm going to move to the next two stories fairly quickly just because of time. I know you got things you got to do, and I actually got to get on the road for a little road trip with my family. But two stories that are kind of similar and related in the fact, they're a little bit more politically oriented. And as you know, we're careful on this podcast to use words specific to parties or whatever, because I mean, we understand there are, yes, Democrats that are pro-gun, and there are also Republicans that are probably more anti-gun than I would like. So we tend to stay focused on those that are in support of gun rights and those who are against. But this one shouldn't come as any surprise, and this is a video. And by the way, as always, the links for all our new stories are in the show notes that are included with every episode. And so there's a link for this one, and it right in this new story is the video. So you got to go watch it, all right? If you watch, and I'm just going to quote real quick what is said in this video that is really key. It's a video of a former Democratic delegate and a volunteer organizer for Hillary Clinton's campaign. And Mary Bayer, the name of this individual, admits, and this video comes from Project Veritas, and this is that group that is, their mission and goal is to just get a lot of this, video content out there of people saying, crazy stuff, basically, and getting it into the public's eye. So in this video, she admits that the party is using, quote, common sense gun control. And we've talked in this podcast about this language of common sense gun control or gun measures or gun safety. They are using these terms and these tactics to trick America into supporting a ban on all firearms and effectively repealing the Second Amendment. Quoting directly from Mary Bayer, Oh, absolutely, she stated when asked by an undercover PV reporter posing as a gun control advocate if she favored banning guns. Quoting her again, I am totally against them, and my husband is against guns. My husband is now a registered Democrat. So, there you go.
Well,
go check out that video.
Yeah, I've always said if you have, I've always thought if you have to lie or make up facts to back up your claims or your stance, then it's probably not the best stance to have. And if it were common sense, you wouldn't have to lie about it.
Yep, absolutely. Matthew, what's our final regular news story before we get to our justified segment?
Really quick, the last one is just a story kind of in line with the other two. This is also through Project Veritas that I pulled up, and this guy, O'Keefe, he goes through and poses as somebody who is a anti-gun advocate and with a group, and wants goes to different political parties' offices and presents a sign that says, we're here, we want to end gun violence, and ask these guys to put up signs in front of their house that this is our house is proudly gun free. And not surprisingly, they refuse to put up the sign, and kind of surprisingly, or not, depending on how you look at it, one of them actually says, "Well, I think that would make me more of a target. My house is more of a target to criminals," which is the whole argument of for guns. But so he's, on the one hand, he's saying, "Yes, I'm anti-gun. I don't think people should have guns, but I don't want to let people know that I don't like guns because it makes me more of a criminal or more of a target for criminals." So it's like, you're proving the point with your stance. So it's a pretty good video if you watch, but it just kind of shows the hypocrisy.
Yeah, and that was also from Project Veritas. That is James O'Keefe's group or organization, is that Project Veritas. So these two videos, they come out pretty close to the same time here, highlighting two instances of just, in my opinion, big-time issues and problems with those that are fighting actively to take away the Second Amendment as it exists today. So go check those videos out. There was one quote, by the way, from the second story, from this story about these Democrats, I guess, that didn't want these signs placed in front of their homes or whatever. It says, while Representative Barbara Lee, Democrat from California, believes that, quote, we need to have, of course, our gun safety measures should be passed, end quote, when Project Veritas journalists visited her office to see if she would put a sign in front of her office or home, her communications director said no. The communications director, in fact, said this, I'm actually a gun owner. As if, I mean, there is a double standard here. We know darn well that many politicians that would restrict gun rights even further are in fact gun owners themselves. In fact, may have very well have concealed carry permits, and in many cases have armed security guards protecting them. And so, as you said, it is pure, complete hypocrisy. And I'm glad, that there's organizations like Project Veritas, and then of course even us through this podcast, doing what we can to bring this to the attention of people so that they see this, so that they see the hypocrisy. And I'm going to go back to the episode that we had, what was that, episode 30, which one was that, with Brandon, and we were talking about assault rifles and stuff like that. And I played the recording of Dr. Susanna Hupp testifying before Congress back in like 1994 or thereabouts, where she says the Second Amendment's not for hunting. It's here to protect us from all of you up there, pointing at the congressmen and women on the on the stand there. So, yeah. Anyway, let's get into our justified news segment. First story, this one comes from DeKalb County, Georgia, and it's pretty short, sweet, simple. It's just, we're going to get through this pretty fast. Victim shoots, kills armed robber outside gas station. Not a lot of details here, but what we know, and this actually happened back on July 3rd, but what we know is that around 12:30 a.m. at this gas station, there was a driver of a vehicle who met another man nearby to engage in a sex act. But when they met, this other individual pulled a gun on him. The passenger then forced, so the other person with the gun is the passenger in the vehicle. So the passenger then forced the driver to go to several ATMs to withdraw cash. So it's turned into a robbery, an armed robbery. When they got to a Shell station, this is the gas station where this took place at, finally. So it sounds like they've been in a couple of stops already. Maybe they've come to this Shell station now to pull more money out of the ATM. Anyway, the suspect apparently got comfortable. He put his gun down, became more relaxed. That's when police say the driver was able to pull out his own gun and shoot one time. Police say it appears the shooting was self-defense, awesome, and the shooter is not facing charges at this time. And this came to us from WSB-TV, Channel 2. That's the local news affiliate in Atlanta. So there you go.
Yeah. When I saw this one, my immediate first thought was picking and choosing your time to engage the threat. You know, it's not always right, you know, right away. It's always, you know, sometimes to lay off and pick and choose when you have the upper hand, because you can't draw on a drawn gun. You can't be quicker than that person. So this great, great job on this guy waiting for the opportunity to say, okay, I'm going to wait for my spot and then I'm going to engage the threat. That was awesome.
Good analysis of that. And then finally, and this is what I've been waiting for like all episode, because I just love this story. A couple of reasons. One, there's a young boy, a 12-year-old boy that's involved, and he saves his mom's life. Two, it comes to us from Lewiston, Idaho. Now, not that this makes me proud of the violence, I guess, that occurred in my home state of Idaho, but it makes me proud that we have scrappy young 12-year-old boys that are able to respond in this manner. And so here's the story. Boy shoots mom's attacker with crossbow and arrow after he tried to strangle her. And actually, the attacker, it should be known, was actually the mother's boyfriend. And there, of course, on this news story, there's a mugshot of the guy. He looks like a real winner. Maybe the mom should find some a better boyfriend.
Yeah.
But so the situation with the mother's boyfriend was trying to strangle the mother and her son, the 12-year-old son. And I don't know where he got it from, but he gets a crossbow and a crossbow bolt or arrow, and shoots the boyfriend in the chest. And, you know, he's treated, and it sounds like, you know, he's probably going to be fine. But the fact is, here is another justified story. We've shared several of these this year about young people, young, usually young boys, but I think we might have had one when it was a young girl, that have been able to successfully defend themselves. And keep in mind, the Second Amendment is not just about firearms. It says the right to keep and bear what? Arms. And crossbow is certainly an arm, in my opinion. Your thoughts?
Right. Yeah, no, I thought, yeah, totally cool. Totally cool that this kid did what he had to do, you know, to save his mom. And that's what the, it's more of a mindset to me when I think about the, like you said, the Second Amendment. It's more of a mindset. It's not just strictly about guns. It's about the right to protect yourself and your, you know, and there are bad people out there that want to harm you. And this kid had that mindset to, he was going to protect his mom. And then, and that was awesome. I mean, he didn't have a gun. He had a crossbow. He used what he had, and look at what happened. Saved his mom's life. That's the mindset of the free individual, you know?
And that's the mindset that we try to instill in our young boys coming out of Idaho, such as me.
Well, yeah, you did your state well.
Anyway, that pretty much wraps up our news stories for this week, folks. So before we go any further, I do want to remind you about our featured / sponsored message today, which is our American Gun Law online training course. So we had pre-launch a few days ago. People had the opportunity to pre-buy a lot of, you know, there was a lot of specials being done, a lot of giveaways. You know, we are in the process of giving away nearly $40,000 worth of stuff to people that have signed up for these drawings.
That's amazing. Also,
there are random winners being chosen from those who have purchased the course. And so there wasn't necessarily purchase necessary for all prizes, but there are some prizes that are being reserved for those that have purchased. So we already did give away the guns. I'm sorry about that. We already gave away some ammo, but we still have a ton of awesome giveaways. So now is your chance. I believe you've got less than a day or two to go and purchase the American Gun Law course before the price goes up and the giveaways are totally given away.
Right.
So go online and sign up or purchase the American Gun Law course at usafirearmtraining.com/AGL, Alpha Golf Lima. I know you've heard it before, but this is a fantastic legal training course for just a fraction, literally pennies on the dollar of what it would cost for you to spend the same kind of time with an attorney getting the answers to your questions. So go check it out. We've had an incredible response to it already. We're just trying to push it as much as we can right now while the price is reduced. It will go up. So don't delay. Matthew, I don't know if you had a chance to check out any of the videos or any of the course yet. If you haven't, I hope that you'll be able to do so soon.
No. I got a chance to check out a little bit of it. But yeah, I'm excited. I think it's such a great service, man. It's going to really help a lot of people.
I'm glad. Thanks, man. I've literally poured sweat and tears into this project. We produced it ourselves, filmed it ourselves, recorded it ourselves. I edited it myself. It's not perfect. It's not amazing. But, you know, we've really tried and worked hard to make it, you know, professional and helpful and informative and a good value. So anyway, I do want to tease that later on this week, on the Wednesday episode of the Concealed Carry Podcast, we will be talking about training outside the box with a new guest, Rob Beckman. And he's from Ohio, like you are, Matthew. He's an instructor in Cincinnati.
Cool.
That's been working with us as of recently. And he has such a unique perspective on and really has a strong opinion about how people should be training, and we tend to agree. I absolutely agree. I support everything he says in this podcast. I've strived myself to train in a manner that is realistic for, you know, how real life really is, and this is a lot of what we talk about. Rob just has a lot of great points. So check us out on Wednesday, August 3rd for that special episode. We're looking forward to having him as a new guest on. As always, we want to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your mobile or listening device. So if you need help with that, go to usafirearmtraining.com/subscribe-to-podcast, where we have those helpful tutorial videos to help you do that. If you haven't done so already, Matthew, are you subscribed to the podcast?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's great. I have my wife listening to it all the time, and she loves it too. So,
Thanks so much. I know that you're always like one of the first people that comments on the blog page when the podcast episodes are posted, and it makes me smile every time. So thanks, man. And we'll be sure to try to have you on again.
That's why.
Yeah, and we'll be sure to try to have you on again soon, because I love your perspective. You're an incredibly talented instructor and an intelligent individual. You always have really good, important stuff to say. And I got to give props to you too, dude.
Well, thanks.
You've been stepping up the game on your video content. Folks, if you haven't seen Matthew's recent review on the website, he does a review on the new Rock Island Armory, which is really made by or owned by Arms Corps, right?
Right, right.
The new 22 caliber TCM is basically, it's like what, a 9mm cartridge necked down to a 22, right?
Exactly. Yep. Just a super high speed 22 round.
Yep. And there's a video there of Matthew demoing it, trying it out, testing it, reviewing it, and your wife too, right?
Yep. I got her involved. Want to give a female's perspective on that, and she was nice enough to come and join me and shoot it. So it was pretty cool. Yep. It was a fun time.
So, big time props to you, Matthew, on that video. It looked awesome, as far as I was concerned.
Thanks,
so we're looking forward to seeing more great stuff from you soon. So with that, we've got to wrap it up today. Thanks for joining us again on the Concealed Carry Podcast, folks. Thank you, Matthew, for joining us. Any last words for the folks before we let them go?
No, I'm going to be back in the States soon where I can legally carry a gun again, so I'm looking forward to that.
Nice. We welcome you back when you do come, but I sincerely hope you enjoy your time in St. Lucia with your family. And so with that, we will bid you all farewell till our Wednesday episode. Take care. If Jacob were here, he would probably say, watch your six. And I'm going to say, train hard, be smart, be prepared. We'll catch you later.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.